all men are created equal. That is so as a matter of inalienable right. Inalienable right. From our Creator, of course. And it's in our Constitution, but we really don't need it because it's already there universally. And all men and all women are fully entitled to all freedoms guaranteed by our precious Constitution and our Bill of Rights. Further guaranteed, don't you think? But even though we the people, we Americans, feel as though we are entitled to that, shouldn't all mankind everywhere have the same? Our Constitution guarantees us life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life as you will. Life as you should be free to live it. And liberty. Liberty free of government and others and dictatorship. As much freedom as possible. Liberty and the pursuit of happiness. To do your own thing, as the old saying goes. Live your way, as Frank Sinatra used to say. My way. And you should have that right, and you should have that privilege, should you not? We are, America is a nation built on the fundamental concept of freedom and as much of it as possible. May that never change. We are a nation exceptional, one of a kind, different and better in all of history than all other nations. In my view, no matter what President Obama says, we are exceptional. We are. Because of what we believe and how we live. But unfortunately, early on in the history of our great country, there was no such freedom or equality for all, sadly so. And that was not the case for so many human beings. Slavery, perhaps the worst of all things, existed in our very own country, and for many decades, far too many. There was, for those slaves, no life, no liberty, and surely no pursuit by them of happiness of any kind. Inequality ruled the day. Inequality rather than equality. And then came the Civil War. And even though slavery was abolished, racism and discrimination continued, both conceptually, that is indirectly, and in reality in so many areas of our great country. That is, slavery de facto. Not on the books, not a matter of law, but still there. There were rules, written and unwritten, and understandings which applied to minorities and people of color, which, if violated, carried consequences. The back of the bus, the unwritten understanding, rule for all second-class citizens of color, existed virtually everywhere. Back of the bus, at least to some extent. It was the new slavery. It was inequality phase two. It was less overt, but still very much as real, the second phase at work. But then came Rosa Parks, she a small but powerful woman, and she stood up to segregation and discrimination, and she sat down. She sat down where only whites could sit. And the bus, because of her, became integrated. The bus became equal for all. No more back of the bus. Rosa Parks sent the message of freedom and equality across our great country and the world. And she demanded her constitutional rights, and she took them. She would ride the bus, and she would sit where she wished. First come, first served. And then there came a most eloquent spokesperson for the constitutional rights and freedoms of people of color, one Martin Luther King. His message, his constitutional demands, spread everywhere, USA and the world over. All men and women, he said, were created equal, regardless of race, color, ethnicity, or national origin. None of that mattered. None of that, he said. Only character did. This man, Dr. King, believed deeply in the American spirit of equality and freedom. He was active and aggressive in social protest, and he passionately believed in the full constitutional rights and freedom, including opportunity for all. And that was especially so with regard to people of color. But people of color with character. His message resonated with millions of minorities and really all right-thinking human beings until that tragic day when an assassin's bullet ended his life. Part of that message of Dr. King was love. And that love in which he believed came primarily from Christian experiences and resources, so that King was able to couple his aggressive message of social protest with spiritual love and compassion. To be sure, there were many who criticized him and who disagreed with his theology, perhaps rightly so, his theology with respect to Christian fundamentals. But the Martin Luther King we celebrate and the day set aside to honor him really is much more about his message rather than the man himself. The meaning of that kingly message was all about freedom and equality and constitutional rights for all, and especially for minorities, men and women of color. That's what we celebrate. And that message spread more forcefully and was heard more clearly following his death. Although Martin Luther King, like so many others, could have adopted and encouraged a policy and pathway of violence, never was that an option for him. Unlike the tragedies in Ferguson, Missouri, and Staten Island, New York, where killings, whether justified or not, caused the eruption of racial violence, Martin Luther King wanted to change the American structure, the prejudice and racial irrationality and hatred, through the means of goodwill, and through dialogue, and through cooperation, and love. And love, not violence. Love and reason were the means to constitutional rights and freedoms. That part of the message of Martin Luther King may well have been forgotten, or not published as it should have been, in Ferguson, and Staten Island, and New York City. And everywhere there is violence. Violence solves nothing. Violence begets violence. He who lives by the sword shall die by the sword. Martin Luther King had no quarter with violence, none at all. But there are those who think that the King message of love, Christian love, racial love, was better articulated and exemplified by yet another King, Dr. Alveda King, niece of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. Alveda King, herself a strong patriot and Christian, perhaps her words and message were as or more powerful than her uncle's. Said she, quote, "There is a wave of passionate come-to-Jesus messages seeping across America," end quote. In effect, the love of Jesus passes understanding and melts away racial hatred, she was saying. Those come-to-Jesus words clearly showed the content of her character and her spiritual priorities. She was probably saying, at least in her heart, the love of Christ constrains. The love of Christ even allows one to love an enemy and not do violence. Dr. Alveda King was passionate about the ending of racial discrimination and racial hatred, even as she sought the ending of abortion, the strengthening of biblical marriage, and the acceptance of good stewardship as part of the economic and spiritual recovery of any human being, black or white. Her message, spiritual and social, was every bit as strong as her uncle. But again, unfortunately, it was never fully publicized or proclaimed by a secular media as that message should have been. Perhaps she was ignored by the public and the media because she was in fact a passionate Christian. Her positions, though morally right, were politically incorrect and consequently largely ignored. But the King message was in fact twofold. Two caring kings. But we really only heard one. In days of old, there was a former slave by the name of Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass. Who knew better the atrocities and hatred of slavery than one who was one? Frederick Douglass said the following. "There is no Negro problem. The problem is whether or not the American people have loyalty enough, honor enough, patriotism enough to live up to their own Constitution." Well, aren't they great words? There is no Negro problem. No. It's a much broader constitutional problem, said Frederick Douglass, insightful and pointed. If we, the people, would live up to our very own Constitution and honor the rights of all human beings and fully practice those precepts, that behavior by itself would solve any racial problems which might exist in America, so said Mr. Douglass. If we were truly patriotic and lived by our own Constitution, the racial problems would be solved. But even today, we still have not fully lived up to our Constitution. And that includes both black and white. It is such a wonderful document. We should never try to destroy it or water it down or eviscerate it or change it or ignore it or foster and divide ourselves as Obama and Holder have done. We should live up to our Constitution. Live up to it. Honor and guarantee the rights in the Bill of Rights as our Constitution would require. protect them for all men and women, including and especially people of color. Then, and only then, would there be no Negro problem, said Frederick Douglass. But we the people can only do that if we are men and women of character, real character, and honor, and patriotism. Those of us without that character, constitutional and Christian, have done great harm to the fundamental precepts of our great society. Immoral men and women, power-hungry, personally ambitious, have corrupted our governments, destroyed significant value in our economy, tarnished our churches and our religions, affected our courts and judicial systems, and wrongly influenced academia and entertainment, destroying morals and traditional values, all because these are men and women without character and caring. They fostered a predisposition among us for ego, for self, for going for ourselves, for situation ethics, what works for us, and in so many ways ignoring the law and living for the moment, the get away with mentality, the get away with mentality. Any attempts at racial understanding and discussion and dialogue and cooperation weakened, even if attempted in such an environment. Men and women of goodwill really never had a chance when other men and women without character ruled the day. You know, I find it so interesting that men and women judge in generalities. The color black is different. So therefore, blacks can be suspect, many white people think. A man or woman white is different, so therefore suspect. That person prejudicial or discriminatory, a black may think, in return. Discrimination generalities are wrong and stereotyped, but at work at all times, it seems, and they prevent dialogue and understanding more than anything else. Perhaps today, lectures, sermons, pontifications, and political demands mean really little or nothing. You know, my fellow Americans, perhaps the real answer is dialogue one-on-one. Black with white, relational. Human, loving, as God would have it, away and apart from society's pressures, from things politically correct, and away from those who would foster class warfare and racial divide. To look one black man in the eye, break bread and talk as real human beings, is cathartic for any white person. A black man engaged in dialogue with a white man can come to know one different human being, regardless of the color of the skin. You know, perhaps that is really the only way this deeply divisive problem can be solved, and the love necessary to heal flowing forth one on one. When all else fails, as it surely is, it is worth a try, is it not? And yet another man worthy of our consideration as right-thinking people seek for racial equality. This man was Nelson Mandela. Mr. Mandela was the first black to become president of the nation of South Africa in 1994. Mandela was a champion of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, of freedom, not just for blacks, but for all mankind. Mandela, a trained lawyer, a strong intellectual, and a one-time revolutionist and radical, even Marxist in his thinking and his belief, one who embraced armed struggle in the early 1960s, turned out to be an incredible voice for change, for freedom, and for equality, not just for blacks or people of color, but for all. His voice in South Africa echoed the world over and should be heard with the same force as Martin Luther King. Mr. Mandela said, "I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to live for and to achieve," said Mr. Mandela. "But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die." Wow. Really powerful, is it not? What an incredible statement. That very same Mandela wasted away in prison for 26 years. 26 years! All the while he cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons would live together in harmony and with equal opportunities.